Great to have you along for this edition of Garden Talk. And by the way, are you a houseplant lover? Today on Garden Talk, we have an indoor plant expert with us to answer your questions. Our guest, Tiffany Olson, is a lifelong lover of plants, 20 years of experience in the industry. She's the owner of the Madison Greenhouse Store. It's located on Williamson Street, or Willie Street, as we usually say here in Madison. It's on the east side of the city, somewhat near where I live, as a matter of fact. I can walk there, and I would say maybe 15, 20 minutes. It's just a nice walk for me. What about you as we talk houseplants? How can she help you with your houseplants? You can join in by calling us at 800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. Or you could send an email to talk@wpr.org. That's talk@wpr.org. Tiffany Olson, welcome. Thank you for taking time to be with us today.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Well, you've been doing this 20 years or so now. How'd you get started? How'd your love of houseplants get started?
Well, my love of houseplants got started by necessity of living in Wisconsin. I moved up here from Texas, and there I was really into a lot of plants that we would just grow outside and bring in for 1 month in January. With the logistics here, houseplants became a necessity and a great joy.
Yeah. And tell us about your store, Madison Greenhouse Store. Give a little history of that and when it opened and so forth.
So the store opened almost 12 years ago. My friend Jordan Hosking founded it. He has the Wisconsin Greenhouse Company, and he builds greenhouses. And he thought it'd be fun to have a garden shop on Willie Street because we all really love our neighborhood. And after a couple of years, he realized he just wants to build greenhouses. And I was really excited to have the opportunity to take over the business. We're located in the historic Way House of Light that was Mona Bolivar's hippie commune artist place. It's a really neat old building in a really great neighborhood.
Yeah, it really is. And I love that neighborhood, just as an aside. You look at in that about two-block area, there's something like 25, 30 local businesses that really a lot of fun and interesting and enjoyable to visit.
It really is. I made a map of the local businesses, and it was very hard to fit them all on the map.
In a very short stretch of streets there, for sure. Well, what kinds of plants, you carry a pretty broad range, but talk about the kinds of plants that you carry.
We carry lots of plants that do well in homes. There's a lot of plants that can do well in Wisconsin, and not all plants are going to be happy in a Wisconsin home. So we try and focus on ones that will do well in your house. For example, ZZ plants, snake plants do really well. We're really into peperomias and money trees because they're pet safe. A ton of our clientele come in and want a plant, but they have a rambunctious cat. And so we really try and make sure to have options like peperomias and hoyas, money trees, fittonias that are safe for their pets.
Yeah, that's one of the questions that always comes up. Kristen had emailed to ask what plants you suggest to help. Well, a couple of things. She wonders about cleaning the air in her apartment and which plants make it that smell good. We got a lot of questions here. Cleaning the air, smelling good, and are pet friendly. She has a dog and a cat.
The combination is a little difficult.
I guess so.
So the studies that NASA did back in the 80s, a lot of those plants, you know, are really great specifically, but really all plants are going to filter your air. The key is that you need a large plant. If a plant doesn't have a lot of leaf surface, then their ability to clean the air is much less, really depending on the size of your space. For smell good, I assume that's part of the air freshening because most house plants don't have a smell. But of the ones that have been specifically studied, most are not pet friendly. The only one I can think of off the top of my head is a parlor palm, and that would be totally pet friendly and is known to be good at filtering the air. The problem with a parlor palm, the Neanthbella, is they're really attractive to cats. And so while it's safe for the cat, when it flutters in the wind, the leaves are very enticing. So sometimes that can be a problem. Ponytail palms, parlor palms and ponytail palms are both great, but again, attractive to cats.
So what does a parlor palm look like? Describe that for me.
It's a classic house plant. I think it dates back to the Victorian age. It's a shorter palm that is more bushy. It doesn't have, you know, a trunk like a palm tree. It's more of like a shrub with lots of little leaflets. And so it's nice because you have a lot of foliage. They can be more difficult in Wisconsin. Another issue with them is humidity in the winter. So you can humidify them and help them, and that also helps you.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that houseplant craze that started during the pandemic, maybe give us an overview of what happened during that time.
Well, it was fascinating. I had only been the owner of the store for 2.5 years or so at the time. So I was still getting my, you know, solid footing, and all of a sudden everybody wanted everything. And I mean, it was crazy. There was so much demand. I couldn't get a golden pothos for a while. And that's the most basic possible houseplant. Florida just ran out of plants. I think everybody, you know, was cooped up inside. They realized maybe their house is kind of boring and they need live green friends to help purify the air, give them something to watch grow. And I think it was a really, really healthy endeavor for people to get into. And I'm happy to report that it seems that a lot of people that started getting really excited about houseplants during COVID are still doing so.
Yeah. Yeah. And of course, you know, it's a supply demand kind of thing. So prices, of course, went up when, you know, Florida's running out of its plants, as an example. Have prices kind of settled, or I should say leveled off, or?
Prices have definitely leveled off. Normal houseplants have increased in price with inflation and costs, you know, increasing with, you know, how that's a part of everything. But with the rare plants that became really popular during COVID, there was such demand and they were hard to get that people were able to charge just insane prices. And a lot of those things are now, you know, very available and the price has plummeted, which is nice. It's become affordable for people to obtain these exotic and fun plants.
Yeah. What are some of the new, or say, let me say newer plants that have been introduced and say in the last decade or so that you like and you use and sell?
I'm a really big fan of the Raven ZZ and the Supernova ZZ. They're both ZZ plants, but they have dark foliage. And then the new foliage comes in chartreuse green. So it's just kind of a really fun, different plant. There's been a lot of really interesting monsteras that have come out that are now approachable for people. The problem with them is that they quickly grow too big for what a lot of people can handle. So I do appreciate the dark colored ZZs having the ability to stay compact and remain part of your life and not become a problem.
Yeah. Speaking of Monstera, Sid had emailed to ask why his Monstera keeps losing leaves in the wintertime. He waters it regularly and they have plant lights on it. Why does he keep getting mushrooms growing in his houseplants?
Well, he may be overwatering his houseplants.
That's what it sounds like.
It's a very common problem. The vast majority of people, when I give advice, I find that they're overwatering their plants. It could also be the soil may be just too rich for the plants to cause the mushrooms, but it can be good for most plants to let the top of the soil dry out. If you keep it always moist, you'll get mushroom or mold growth. For monsteras dropping leaves in the winter, that's very common. It's great that they have a grow light on it. My guess would be if you have a grow light with consistent lighting, then the plant doesn't actually know that it's winter as much. except from the temperature drop in your house and the humidity drop. So I would consider maybe it would be good to increase humidity. However, if this person has a mushroom problem from growing in their soil, then maybe that's not helpful.
So the Monstera for that particular plant, then, in terms of watering, waiting for the top soil part to sort of dry a little bit before you add water, or what's the best way?
Yes, I would definitely suggest allowing the top 1 to 2 inches of the soil to dry pretty much completely before you then water well. And once you water well, you want all of the soil to absorb the water. Don't just pour it in one spot. And then after a little bit, make sure you drain whatever water is left in the saucer. You don't want it to be sitting in water for too long.
Yeah, so you said top 2 inches?
It depends on the size of the plant.
Of course,
if the plant is larger, 2 inches. If it's a smaller plant, maybe more like 1 inch.
Tiffany Olson, our guest today. She is the owner of Madison Greenhouse Store. Great to have her with us as we talk houseplants. And you can join in, too. Number to call, 800-642-1234. Or you could email us, the email address, talk@WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk on WPR News. You're listening to Garden Talk here on WPR News. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Tiffany Olson. She is the owner of Madison Greenhouse Store. We're talking with her about houseplants. I just want to mention, I hope you can join us next week for our first book club book of the year on the Larry Mueller Show book club. This one is a novel. It's titled Snowbirds, written by Christina Clancy, a good writer. It's a story of a couple who kind of flee winter in the Midwest for Palm Springs, where they find their relationship at a crossroads. I just finished it yesterday or the day before. It's a really good read. And we'll be talking with Christina on Thursday of next week, and I'm looking forward to it. Still have time to read it. You can join in, too, whether you've read it or not. But what about houseplants? Questions about houseplants? I hope you'll join in. The number's 800-642-1234. Email to talk@WPR.org. Perry in Oconto, Wisconsin, has a question. Let's go there. Hi, Perry.
Hello. I have a Norfolk pine, and you were talking about watering, and I thought it would be a good time to call in. I have a Norfolk pine, and I'm not exactly sure if I'm watering too much or too little. I'm thinking maybe too little, but some of the ends of the branches or the tips of the branches, they're kind of brown. And this is a Norfolk pine I've had for many years. I originally had put a crocheted angel on top, and the top grew through the angel. Now it's going back down towards the floor. So it keeps it from hitting the ceiling, I guess, but that's about it.
Have you transplanted it or replanted it at all, Perry?
I have not replanted it in many years, but I do fertilize it. Only in the late spring through early fall.
Okay. And how do you fertilize it, or what do you use?
I use a regular houseplant fertilizer called Monty. I think it's an 8-16-8, like that.
What do you think, Tiffany?
I think it's probably time for a repot. I imagine that the soil after all of these years has become hydrophobic and condensed down, and so that it can't really absorb the water. If you haven't really changed your watering, then my guess would be it's time. I would wait another month or two, but I would suggest repotting it in a really high quality fertile soil. And then once you do repot it, I would kind of pull back on the fertilizing for a little bit while it uses the nutrition available in the soil that you have it in. In the meantime, I would suggest maybe trying to soak it. It's possible that the soil is pulled back from the sides of the pot and you're just not really getting any water to it. So it might be good to have just an initial before springtime deep soak.
And then, of course, drain the water out of the holding pan.
Yes, yes. But I would, if the soil is really seized up and not accepting water, sometimes people will just pour water in and then it will get to the drainage saucer without absorbing at all. So sometimes I think it can be good to let it actually sit in water for like an hour and really absorb the water. Some people will do this with bottom watering and actually only water from the bottom so that the plant sucks up what it needs and the soil really is able to accept it.
Oh, good points. Good tips there. Perry, good luck with it. Thank you very much for calling. Let's turn to Carla in Coleman, Wisconsin. Hi, Carla.
Hi, how are you?
Great, appreciate the call. What's on your mind?
I bring in all my coleus from the summer, and I grow them in the winter, and some of them do really well, and some of them don't. And I'm just wondering if there is a trick to keep most of them growing until next spring or this in a few months when I can take them back outside.
Do you put them all in the same place when you bring them in? So do they all get the same light and so forth?
Most of them are in, in the east windows, so they get the morning sun. I would say there's one there that doesn't do well, and then there's another one that's over by my patio door that doesn't do well, but the other ones are doing well. So it just sort of, I have a bunch of them. But I love coleus, and I'm just wondering if there's some tricks to keep them growing.
All right. Tiffany, what do you think?
Well, if you have some doing well and some not, I would guess that part of it might be the location. Coleus, in my experience, are somewhat cold sensitive, so I would be concerned about the one by the patio door. And if you've been opening that door, it may be exposing it to too much cold, especially this winter. Coleus also, in my personal experience, are very prone to mealybugs indoors. When you bring them in, it's very possible that they could be showing up in January and February. So I would do a good inspection of each plant and make sure you don't have any mealybugs hiding on the leaves or on the stems. If your plant is looking super sad and you just kind of want to do a Hail Mary, coleus propagate really well in water, especially water with perlite. So you could potentially do cuttings from the plants that aren't looking super hot and just put them in some purified water with some chunky perlite in a vase, just stem cuttings, and let them re-root, and then you can start fresh again in the spring.
That's a good, very good idea as well. Carla, good luck. Appreciate that call. Bruce in La Crosse, we'll go to you next. Hi, Bruce.
Yeah, good afternoon. Say, I bought some tulip bulbs in October and put them in the refrigerator, hoping to force start them this spring. When is the best time for me to begin that process?
You said you put them in the fridge in October?
Yes, early, about mid-October, correct.
So generally forcing tulips, you'll want to do 10 to 12 weeks in the fridge. Traditionally, people will do it planted into soil first to kind of more recreate the outside conditions. So if you didn't do that, I would consider, it's not the normal method, but you could plant them into soil now and put them back in the fridge for a little while and see if they can maybe get started and learn which direction is up before you want to bring them out and propagate them in your home to force them. But if you did have them in since October, we have had enough cold months since then that you should be at the time that is correct for forcing.
Yeah. It's always fun, isn't it, to have those tulips, in the house come up. They're so beautiful. Really get you thinking about spring and summer. Bruce, there you go. Thank you so much for calling. You can join in, too. The number's 800-642-1234. Email to talk at WPR.org. We'll get you on pretty quickly here. Mary emailed, she would love to get some spring plants or new house plants, but it seems as though the fungus gnats are always an added bonus, so to speak.
Fungus gnats are really definitely a great frustration and always a concern when you're introducing a new plant into your home. In some situations, they're somewhat impossible to avoid. So it's always good to quarantine your plants. If you first bring a plant home and you cover the soil with sand or something to break the life cycle, you can keep the ones in the soil from coming out, and you may be able to stop the new introductions from having those issues to begin with. Otherwise, if you want to start treating preemptively, people like to use mosquito bits, which is a bacterium that only kills mosquito and fungus gnat larvae. That can be super helpful to mix into the soil or into your water. But I am a big fan of the breaking the life cycle of covering the surface of the soil, so that when the bugs are flying around, you know, they can't land on the soil. And then when the young ones hatch and come out, they can't get out. And if you can stop that transaction at the surface level, you can save yourself a lot of heartache.
How much would you need to put, how much sand would you need to put on top?
At least a quarter of an inch, probably more like half an inch. You can also use like a really fine crushed glass, is much more attractive than sand. But it needs to be pretty solid, especially because then when you go to water the plants, you know, you might be disturbing that layer. A lot of people do bottom water as well in an effort to help reduce fungus gnats, since they're attracted to the top of the soil being moist. If it's only moist below the surface, then that can also help reduce them.
That's a good idea as well. And you mentioned mealybugs earlier. If you have mealybugs, how do you get rid of them?
It depends on how bad your mealybugs are and the conditions you're in. There is a systemic chemical that you can apply into the soil if it's a last-ditch attempt to save a family heirloom. But generally speaking, rubbing alcohol is a really great method. I like to mix rubbing alcohol with water and insecticidal soap and spray the whole plant down. Do that a couple of times. And then as the later ones arrive, go in with a Q-tip and straight rubbing alcohol and zap them. And it's quite fun, because their little fuzzy white outer coating shrivels up, and at least you get to see the activity happening as you are murdering the mealybugs. And you can be really specific. If it's not a bad infestation and you catch it early, you can absolutely just spot treat with alcohol. You know, make sure you check in thoroughly at each part of the plant once a week in perpetuity. If you're going to do just a spray down method, I found it takes about 2 months of treating once a week, and then you're pretty good to go.
So that spray down, what's the ratio of the various ingredients there?
People's opinions vary. I like to go nuclear.
Nuclear?
Nuclear, yeah. I'll use straight for the zapping. For my spray bottles, I'll do 50%. Water, 50% alcohol, and a splash of insecticidal soap. I think that you need to do at least probably one part to four parts alcohol to make it viable. Not all plants are going to want to be zapped with this. Anything with a fuzzy leaf like a purple passion or a African violet, as the alcohol evaporates, you know, it can cause scarring and chilling on the leaves that you want to avoid. But in my opinion, you can go really strong as long as it's not too often. And as long as you're making sure for you that you have good air ventilation, I would not spray your plant with 50% rubbing alcohol in a closed condition. It's not fun to breathe.
Got to say, I love your website. I went to your website, and one of your categories is the murder department. Which is, tells us what you have to get rid of things like mealybugs and other things as well. So that's kind of fun. Elizabeth in Auburndale, we'll give you a chance to join in. Hi, Elizabeth.
Hi, good afternoon, Larry. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Hey, at Christmas time, I was at my local grocery store, and of course they have these little Christmas trees that they spray decorations, quote unquote, onto to make them prettier. I'm fundamentally opposed to that, but at that time of the year, I could see that these little guys were going to end up in the dumpster, so I rescued a dozen of them. and brought them home. I have lots of houseplants. I have nice southern exposure windows. But I've noticed that some of them are doing just fantastically and some are not. And I'm getting a lot of dry tips on the ends of some of the little trees. I'm treating them all the same, you know, and I turn them two or three times a week like I do all my houseplants. And they're all getting the same treatment, but some are not doing as well as others. Any tips for me?
So they still have the spray on it. Was the decoration like a litter or were they like spray painted?
Purged all that yuck off of them, put them in bigger pots because they were terribly root bound. And, you know, I gave them a big upgrade, cleaned them up, and they bounced back really well. And they've been doing well consistently, except now, like I said, two or three of them have these crispy ends on the branches, which is to me a signal that something's not right.
Yeah, I would agree that it seems like something's not right, but it sounds like you've done everything right. And if they're all getting the same treatment, I really, I don't know what I would suggest might be the issue. If they all have fresh soil and similar watering and similar locations, so maybe temperature or drafts are not an issue.
Yeah.
I would suggest maybe moving the ones that are sad to a more fancy location. You know, if you can give them like a spot in your shower, or not in your shower, but you know, somewhere with great humidity, somewhere just really posh, send them to a spa for a little while, see if they cheer up.
Yeah, it's not a bad idea. And maybe you want to get them away from the other plants anyway. If there's something wrong with those three, I'd be sorely tempted to get them away from the other ones. Just for fear that something might transfer from one plant to the next. But I think that's great advice, Tiffany. Thanks very much for that question, Elizabeth. Krista in Madison, we'll go to you. Hi, Krista.
Hey there. So I have a Buddha temple. It's a succulent. And when I got it, it was looking okay, but then I noticed that some of the leaves were getting a little yellow. And I think it's something that's supposed to be watered once or twice, maybe a winter. And so I put it in a different soil, a cactus soil. And then I finally got a water meter that told me that the soil was wet. And so the leaves are getting a little bit more yellow. It's coming up, the Buddha temple. The top of it's pretty green still, but I'm just not sure if it can be saved.
If you still have a lot of green, happy, leafy parts of the plant, it's probably savable. If the base of the stem is very mushy, you may need to chop it and propagate it and reroot it. It should be pretty easy to do that. Are the yellow leaves down low or are they at the top of the plant?
They are down low.
That's good news. I would suggest, I mean, if it's going kind of fast and you feel like you want to, you know, make a big change because you think it's inevitable that the decline is going to continue, I would suggest cutting it with very clean pruners and making sure that the stem portion that you're cutting into is all green with no brown, and then let that dry for a few days and reroot it and try and start again. Buddhist temple is a relative of the jades, and so it should be very easy to propagate and maybe just start again with some fresh soil and a new root system.
All right, Krista, there you go. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. And you can join in 800-642-1234. Give a call with your houseplant question or experience. Love to hear from you. Colleen in Cumberland emailed to ask if you have any tips on here's a gal with Colleen wondering about shamrocks. I wonder why. Anyway, she has wonders if you have any tips on wintering shamrocks. She plants them outside in the summer, digs them up, and brings them in for winter, but they don't do well. My son keeps his shamrock in a sunny window, and his flourishes. Her daughter keeps her shamrock in a cool north window, and hers flourishes as well. What am I doing wrong? She plants them outside in the summer, digs them up, and brings them in for winter.
So It's interesting because her kids are doing the two different methods you can do. You can either keep it alive and pretend that winter didn't happen, or you can give it kind of a dormancy period and have it sleep through the winter and then come back again in the spring. Hmm. I feel like my one question would be maybe that if she has the suggestion from the kids then to do those two different methods, perhaps she's digging it up too late. Perhaps like she's leaving it in the ground too long, or maybe disturbing the roots too much. Sometimes people will plant plants like that in the plastic pot. And then when you want to bring it in the fall, you can just remove the plastic pot from the soil and you're not disturbing the corms that are hiding underground.
Oh, yeah, that's a good idea. I was thinking about the leaves and dropping leaves and so forth. I've had limey lime tree that would drop its leaves, but it's a plant that would replace it with winter leaves, shall we say. Leaves that will do better in a little bit lower light conditions. And that's something I think a lot of plants do, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah. As they start that process, although it is a little scary, for sure. Pam in Wausau, what's on your mind?
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I love ivy, all different kinds, variegated, English, what have you. And in 40 years, I've never been able to keep one alive or get it to grow. I can grow all kinds of other plants successfully, but never an ivy. What are the tricks?
And what do you know? What kind of ivy do you have there?
I've tried variegated. I've tried English ivy. I've tried lots of different ivies over the years.
Okay.
My experience with ivy is that they are cursed to spider mites. I actually don't have them in my store in the winter because it is almost impossible to not have them just be a magnet for spider mites. So I would suggest if you get one, treat it like it always has spider mites. If you want to do like a week treatment of neem very often, that could be helpful. Just cleaning off the leaves. I'm a big fan of Crockett that used to write a lot of garden books and had a show. And he suggests giving your plants a shower once a week, you know, washing them down. And I think that that could be a really good thing for an ivy. So you can kind of recreate the outdoor conditions where those leaves would get washed off and you don't have a perfect scenario for the spider mites with dry air inside in the winter. And then just ivies being ivies, they're such magnets for spider mites that I'm guessing that many of the times you've struggled, it's been because of that. I do know they're easy to propagate if you want to put some cuttings in water. So it might be something where if you find that it's struggling, you could try and save the plant in that way.
Yeah, that's another good tip as well. Pam, thank you for calling. In our earlier show, when we were talking about perennials with our perennial guest, someone called and said, hey, can I treat some perennials as houseplants? And I wonder, do you do any of that or what works? Which
sure.
plants work?
I do mess around with that and enjoy it greatly. This time of year, they're all looking pretty sad, but very soon they'll be able to go outside. And the nice thing is the perennials that I am overwintering indoors are the last things in and the first things out because they are more borderline cold tolerant. So it's nice that their, you know, rental time in my kitchen is less long. I find they do the very best on my plant porch, which is I heat it to about 55 degrees and it has full southern sun. So I keep it really cold out there and I do make sure to water them thoroughly once a week. My best success is with herbs. I love rosemary. I've grown one to be almost as tall as me. Mandevillas do well, citrus, hibiscus, other herbs like thyme and sage, lavender. it's definitely, you know, a mixed bag, whether plants will tolerate it or not. But I do think if you're going to bring it inside, I would suggest having it live its life in a pot. I wouldn't put it in the ground, dig it up, bring it inside. That's too many changes. You know, if you want to make it spend the winter indoors, you want it to, you only want to make one big change in its life. You don't want to annoy it in multiple different manners at once.
Okay. Evan in Eau Claire, your turn. Hi, Evan.
Hi. I have a spider plant at home that has some brown edges on the tips. The rest of the plant is pretty green, but it's just those brown edges that I want to know how to, maybe I could remedy that or do something about it.
Sure. Traditionally with spider plants, the brown tips, I assume, are from tap water and excessive chlorine and fluoride. I do have to say Eau Claire has fabulous water, as your name does belie, but if you think it might be possible that the tap water is causing it, I would definitely switch to purified water. Otherwise, you may be overwatering it. And in that case, I would repot it and remove any mushy brown roots and give it fresh soil and potentially a fresh pot.
Okay, so a couple different ways to look at that, Evan. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. Tiffany Olson, our guest today. She's the owner of Madison Greenhouse Store on Willie Street or Williamson Street in Madison. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk on WPR News. Thanks for listening in today. Larry Mueller here. Just a note, Monday we'll be talking to our physical therapy guests about resistance training for seniors, and we'll also have a look at efforts to improve health messaging in central Wisconsin. Right now, we're talking houseplants with Tiffany Olson, owner of Madison Greenhouse Store on Williamson Street in Madison. Great to have her with us. And again, you can join in at 800-642-1234 or email to talk at WPR.org. Jody in Brooklyn, Wisconsin, your turn. Hi, Jody. We're not getting her, but she has a money tree, and it's all foliage and no blooms. And she wonders, what can she do to get blooms from her money tree?
There's lots of plants that are called money trees, so I'm not sure which one she's talking about, which happens often, particularly with money tree. Money tree, Pachyra aquatica, the braided tree with the trunks and the palmate foliage, those ones aren't known for blooming. I would not expect it to bloom. I've heard some people call jade plants money trees, so I'm wondering if maybe that's what she means. I have had success having jades bloom. They have lovely white blooms in the winter. And the jades that I have gotten to bloom have all been at a client's house. They have a solarium that Jordan, my friend that builds greenhouses, built for them in Maple Bluff. And these plants are huge and old and getting tons of light year round. I do fertilize lightly year round, which I know is not what everybody suggests, but it's what I do. I keep them very bonsai'd and in small pots and then just hope for blooms in the winter.
Sounds good to me. And I like that part about fertilizing it. You know, I told a plant expert once that she should be fertilizing her lime tree every watering. And she said, well, no, they don't recommend that. And I said, well, if you'd like limes, which I would get many from Limey, I had her on the show the next year, and she said, I took your advice, and I get all kinds of limes. So sometimes regular fertilizing can work pretty well. Lori in Manitowish Waters, your turn. Hi, Lori.
Hey, I have an older anthurium plant. I have a couple, but this one's probably 10 years old. Actually, it was a Valentine's gift from that time. And I've repotted it up. I know they like to be pot-bound. But now I'm wondering, like, the next step, because it's already in a pretty big pot. It's a big plant. It's got pretty hot lipstick pink stamens that flower all the time. How can I tell it's time to go up to another size with an anthurium that likes to be pot mound?
If the way that you are watering it seems to change greatly, like if you are testing the soil with your finger and the frequency with which you feel like you need to water changes greatly, that can be a great indication. I personally feel like at certain points with certain plants, like an anthurium, you might have just kind of reached the maximum size. If you wanted, maybe you could divide the plant and have something smaller. But I would suggest kind of if you've got it at a manageable size that fits into your lifestyle, you might want to just repot it with fresh soil, but in the same pot and not go up to a larger size. You know, they love to be bound, root bound. So you don't want to, you really don't want to go overboard, but sometimes they just like fresh nutrition, fresh soil structure. And so you can just keep it in the same pot and then maybe every spring give it some fresh soil.
That makes a lot of sense. Yeah. Lori, give that a shot. Thank you so much for calling. Bruce in Skokie, Illinois. Your turn. Hi, Bruce.
Yeah, I like to make a U-turn and go back to ivies for a while. boy, I just lost my train of thought. I just wanted to know, you've been in business for 12 years at your store. I never heard of it before, but because I worked up there for a dozen years. But did you ever hear of a place called Hedera, et cetera?
I have not heard of that, but that's an excellent name.
I haven't either.
He used to have a catalog. He had hundreds of ivies in it, English ivy. And you could get anything, you know, baby gold. And I was just wondering, which ones do you carry, any specific ones, or just what? A lot of places, I'll ask what they carry, and they say, whatever the wholesaler sends us. That's typically how I get answered. And I get that, but, you know, I've had arguments with people. I said, you know, especially if you get a young thing and say, do you have this? And they say, well, we have blue ones and we have green ones. And I said, no, every plant has a name, every single plant. And if you don't know the name, then we're not going to continue talk. You know, I say to them.
All right, ivy.
So as I had mentioned, I don't carry a lot of ivy because I think they're cursed with spider mites. But in the summer times, I will source ivies generally from Canada. I find plants that I get from Canada have less pest issues. They really care about how they're growing their plants in Ontario. I like to get the German ivies. I feel like they're a little bit more tolerant of different conditions with their thicker leaves. I'm not a huge fan of ivy.
Okay.
To be fully honest.
There you go, Bruce. Thank you so much for calling. Gene in Ellison Bay. Hi, Jean.
Hi, I have a Meyer lemon tree that I bought, and it's growing, but some of the branches are quite low, and I'm wondering if I should be pruning those low branches, and maybe like the lime, should I be fertilizing it more often? And I've just, you know, my grandma used to have one in her candy store window, and I want to have lemons someday from this tree.
Well, I can tell you, I would put a fish emulsion fertilizer in every time I watered it, if I were you. But that's me. What do you think, Tiffany?
I actually also agree. I think that citrus are one of the hungriest plants, and I'm all for watering them. Personally, fish emulsion is not a great smell for me in my house, so not my go-to choice for fertilizer. Due to smell, but I absolutely would suggest fertilizing it. If it's quite young, I would personally kind of refrain from pruning it too much other than for shape. I guess it depends on what look you're ultimately going for. But if you are going to prune it, I would wait another, you know, month or two. Plants are, especially citrus, are really struggling at this time of year. And I have some that are making new leaves, but I wouldn't want to mess with them too much until warm temperatures are coming and they'll have happy times ahead.
I had my grow lights on in a pole lamp, so that the lamp was they were getting light from three different sources up and down the plant, which I kind of seemed to work well for sure. Gene, there you go. And there are some, as you say, there are, and you probably sell fertilizer for citrus plants other than fish emulsion.
Yeah, anything with a nice high phosphorus. But, I mean, there are other things that citrus needs, so it is good to look for something that's citrus-specific. Fish emulsion, though, is super great outdoors in the summer.
Well, it can work in the winter, too.
Yeah. I mean, I don't eat seafood, so it's a personal thing.
Okay. One of the things that you sell is a renewable long-fibered sphagnum moss. I was looking at the various products that you have, a wide variety of products, and that renewable long-fiber sphagnum moss is right from Wisconsin, is it not?
That is correct, yes. Mosser Lee farms sphagnum moss just north of us in central Wisconsin. We are one of the only places in the world that produces sphagnum moss. Chile and New Zealand do. And a lot of people like the New Zealand moss because it has a different texture and it's prettier. But I love that it's something that is sustainably grown so close to home. There's not all of these, you know, boats going across the ocean with it. It's something we can be proud of here in Wisconsin.
I love
it. The downside is the crops are less reliable.
Yeah, but it's harvested here in Wisconsin marshes. It's dried. It's hand-packaged. I mean, I like that idea of something from Wisconsin, a product from Wisconsin that's close to home, really close to home. You had some other one. I mean, wiggle worm castings. Benefits of that in a potted plant, in indoor plant?
Worm castings are a really great additive for an indoor plant. It's just nitrogen, so it's only really going to help, you know, the leaf part, but that's what we're doing mostly for indoor plants. It also has a lot of calcium, which all plants really enjoy. So it's really nice, and it's nice because it's very gentle. I worry sometimes when people use really, really strong fertilizers, it can be hard to measure and do it correctly. And with worm poop, you know, you can just mix it into your soil and your plant will say thank you. You don't have to do too much thinking or too much measuring. And wiggle worm is a local Wisconsin producer of worm castings too.
And you feature local artists, including yourself. I tell you what, I love your artwork.
It's really
cool. The corn cobs and the watermelon, it doesn't sound like it'd be a good combo, but it's just absolutely beautiful. Thanks for that work that you do. And I would tell people, you know, go online to Madison Greenhouse Store if you'd like to see some of that artwork or some of the other local artists who have ceramics and planters and so forth that you sell through your store. It's a lovely store, and I want to thank you, Tiffany, so much. Will you come back and be with us again?
I would love to. I've had an absolute blast.
And somebody told me that you look a lot like the Mona Lisa. And I agreed. Thanks so much, Tiffany. Tiffany Olson, her business is Madison Greenhouse Store. It's located on Williamson Street or Willie Street in Madison. Great to have her with us. And we'll have her back, and we'll talk about houseplants again with her. It was a lot of fun. Thanks to our team. Our producers are Clara Neipert and Joel Patnaud. Our technical directors, Lee Rayburn and Jeff Robbins. Our executive producer is Jill Nadeau. I'm Larry Mueller. Thanks for listening and stay with us. Lots more in store here on WPR News.